Gentlemen, so what we have are two different texts that we're working with. One is this Hebrew text, which is called Tenuat HaMusar, and the other is an English text that we introduced last week for the first time as an experiment, which is called Israel Salanter.
You mentioned that last week. Yeah.
Yes. What we have open in front of us is chapter 23 in the Hebrew of Tenuat HaMusar, and we have a section here on both theory and practice about refashioning behavior in the book Israel Salanter. And those pages are divided into two sections. One section, which we pretty much covered last week, but maybe we'll review a few of those points, starts on page 138. It's called Practice. And that takes us to page 143. The first chapter of this section starts on page 130, 131, and takes us till 138. That's called Theory. So those are the sections in the English. We're going to first focus our attention on the Hebrew. As we've discussed in the past, Rabbi Yisrael divides up his methodology into two different sections, two different parts. One is called Tikkun HaMidos, and the other is called Kvishas HaMidos. Tikkun HaMidos, we gave it an English name, if you remember, we called it transmutation. And then we had an English word for Kvishas HaMidos, which was called subjugation. So we're going to try to discuss those two as we go along. Now again, as usual, what I try to do is I try to summarize a paragraph and then move on to the next paragraph. On occasion, I'll ask you to underline either a word or a line. After Rabbi Yisrael has clarified in the previous chapter, which was chapter 22, the extreme significance of midos, of character traits, of attributes, now he comes to face the issue, how? How do we improve our character traits? How do we perfect them? He says the first concept is called Yira. Yira means fear of God. Fear of God is very, very significant, but it's not, and by far not enough, because it's too general. A person fears God, that tells him that he has to improve, for sure, but it doesn't tell him specifically how to pinpoint and how to single out areas where he has to work on himself. So Yira is very critical. He has to have an overview, a general feeling of, I want to be good, I want to do what God wants, I want to fulfill His will, I have a tremendous fear and awe of God. But again, although that's critical, and that's the precondition, it's like taking, I would give you the example of a prerequisite course before you can take the course that you want to take, but it's not going to do the job. A person has to obviously have Yira, which means he loves good and he despises evil. But now he's at the point, he's at the juncture where he has to find a way of improving himself at every level, vis-a-vis every single midah, and really to pinpoint those parts of his inner personality that need to be uplifted. And now the question is, what methods or at his disposal, Is there another photocopy of the pages?
Yeah, we're at 5.
Have you?
Start at 5.
We start at 5. Thank you. And the reason we start at 5 is because we got the okay from Sam. Now, where is Sam? I don't know. He's studying for his LSAT. It's okay, fine. Now, the first prerequisite from Rabbi Yisrael's perspective, and now we're moving on to the last paragraph on page 315, is knowledge. Again, in the previous paragraph we spoke about the general overall fear of God. Now we're talking about knowledge. Knowledge means to be a baki v'charif, on line 3 of that last paragraph, to be an expert and to have an insight into all parts of the Torah. You may remember way back when, about a month ago, when we discussed Rabbi Yisrael's ideology, the cornerstone, the fundamental part of his ideology is how much Torah we have to know. And if you recall, it was quite frightening because, you know, you've really got to know everything. But now, Rabbi Yisrael focuses on a particular kind of knowledge within the general framework of Torah knowledge. And that is, which you'll see two lines in change above the end of this page, Lahakir Here I want you to underline these words, Lahakir mahuta shalkol mida umida. Unbelievable. He's requiring you to do an absolute investigation, a comprehensive study of every single characteristic. Soon we're going to get to a list of 13 different characteristics, but those are just examples. The list goes on and on. To study those characteristics, I'll give one example of my own over here, if I can interject as my own footnote. Let's say the attribute of emes, of speaking truth. Under what circumstances am I absolutely committed to total truth without any flexibility? Under what circumstances does the Torah allow me to fabricate the truth? To study this, ladat pratel udrachel, to know all the details of such a thing, when you're allowed to lie, when you're not allowed to lie, how to behave in a certain situation when you're challenged with the possibility of falsifying the truth, all this, he says, is not included in the Shulchan Aruch. Take a look on page 316. He said, although the Shulchan Aruch will give you the intricate laws and the details of kashrus, of Shabbos, of how to observe tefillah and fulfill the mitzvos, however, there's no separate Shulchan Aruch, which should have been written exclusively for the understanding of each one of the midos. And then he says that there are many, many halachos, there are many, many details all over Shas, and they're spread apart with regard to each midah. Who could join them together, create a study, present a disciplined, comprehensive study of each particular midah? Rabbi Yisrael first saw the Chafetz Chaim, a book that's dedicated totally, exclusively to one midah, and that's speaking positively about a fellow Jew and not telling negative, pejorative stories about him. This was authored by none other than the Chafetz Chaim himself. And according to the books, the history books, what motivated the Chafetz Chaim to write this book? It was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. When the Chafetz Chaim heard that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was begging a study, an in-depth study of each particular midah, and each midah could fill up a whole book, the Chafetz Chaim took it upon himself to focus single in on one particular midah that he felt was lacking in the community, in his generation, and he wrote a book on that midah. How careful we have to be in our assessment and our speech about another Jew. Says Rabbi Yisrael, I'm excited. I was really happy. I don't know if he got a signed first copy edition of the Chafetz Chaim, I don't know. But he was very thrilled about it. But he said, Yesh lechaber sfarim ka'elu al kol mida umida. A book should be written like that of the Chafetz Chaim on Lashon Hara for every single mida. Because each mida he called a Torah Shlema. It has a full Torah. And the first stage in our development of midos is to learn in depth those midos, to go through all of the statements of Chazal and to focus on them, to try to integrate them into one whole, to see how the pieces of the puzzle fit into place. You have this midah, you have that midah, what if there's a conflict between the two, and so forth and so on. I want to tell you, gentlemen, today we're on the way towards this, believe it or not. We've made a tremendous amount of progress in the last century. And I can tell you that there are books where the books are organized by Aleph Bet according to the alphabet. You can look for a midah. Let's say you're looking for MS, you look under Aleph. One of the books is, as you know, I teach on Tuesday nights, Peliotes. Peliotes is organized according to the alphabet for each midah. So if I want to know about love, I look up Ava. If I want to know about Lashon Hara, I look up Lashon Hara on the Lamed. And there are literally hundreds of sections in that book, but there are many, many other books. Today you can get books that are organized. Today we have computer access, so a lot of this information has been collected based on computers. And not only that, if you have the right computer programs, you can do it on your own. Take, for example, I use a program now already, there are programs way beyond this, but I use a program called Bar-Ilan. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's on a little disk on key. I can put into Bar-Ilan and punch in a word. Let's say I want to punch in the word MS. I will get hundreds of sources, starting with the Torah, going to the Gemara, down to the Poskim, on this topic of Emes. It's an amazing feat. And with every 5 minutes, more books are being inputted into the Bar Ilan project. But this is what Rabbi Yisrael says. Rabbi Yisrael talks about the impact of studying Midos, of understanding the halachas of Midos. He says, Milvan, besides the Bir Tzad Halacha Shebedot, besides the obvious benefit of clarifying what does Jewish law tell me and dictate for me as to how I should behave in any given situation, Rabbi Yisrael says it's much more than that. The impact of studying the halachas of Midos goes beyond the issue of practicality. It goes into the issue of the nefesh. Let's just review what we said about Rabbi Yisrael's ideology. The nefesh, the soul of a person, is made up of kochot kehim, of all these different energy forces within the soul that are so dominant. You remember, of course, the mashal of a father wakes up and there's a fire, and the first thing he does is he saves his son. You remember that discussion we had? Says Rabbi Yisrael, the in-depth study of halachos, meaning the laws that govern the midos, will have an impact on the kochos kehim. It means it's going to have an impact on his soul in such a way that he's already made the first step. He's already in the process of improving his midos. However, that's not a radical change. He's not yet ready for the main stage, which he calls a radical change in the person's midos. And here Rabbi Yisrael, in the third paragraph on page 316, mentions some of the concepts that we've seen before, and now the pieces of the puzzle are beginning to fit into place. Says Rabbi Yisrael, when a person decides that he wants life, he wants goodness, he wants to fulfill the will of God, first, he should study all the statements of the Chazal that are dedicated to understand those midos. And number two, shinun. Shinun means to review them over and over and over again. And element number three is what he calls him hitpa'alut. And here, if you remember from the book that we gave out last week, the photocopy, this he calls impassioned speech and thought. The emphasis is on passion. The emphasis is on the emotional experience of reading these texts and have them seep into and penetrate his nefesh. And he says the following. Seichel, intellect, will take him just so far. Seichel, he describes as something that spreads out like a river that overflows and moves in many different directions. However, hispalus, this concept of impassioned speech and thought, is very much different than the intellect. It's not spreading out, but rather it's gathering together. It gathers together all the powers of one's soul, he calls them kochot ha-nefesh, in order to focus and single out on one particular midah. And now his entire emotional and spiritual inner self is completely passionate about strengthening himself and improving himself on that midah. And he says the following. There's a mirror image here. Why is his palus? Why is this impassioned speech and thought so critical? Well, he says, let's look at the negative side. What brings a person to violate the will of God? It's passion. If passion is going to bring man down the wrong track towards the wrong goal, then the same passion, if used and directed child in the right way, can bring him towards the correct goal, towards the good. And therefore, he gives the following example. And here we're on page 317. If you see, there's a long paragraph that starts in the middle of the page, Lefi Da'ato. And here, Rabbi Yisrael gives the following example. We have a midah called anava, which is humility, And its flip side, on the negative side, is called gava, which is conceit. He says, what brings man to this sense and the state of being conceited? He says, what he does is, he first is very involved passionately in himself, always focused on himself, trying to build himself up. And because his focus is on me, myself, and I, his passion brings him to the state of how great I am. Then he looks out at others, and again in a very impassionate way, as a result of his self-love, his narcissism, if you want to use that word, which completely tones up and increases the decibels of his focus on what he's great at, all his positive attributes. I'm good looking, I'm clever, I have great social skills, I have money, I have everything, right? So he focuses on all his malice, on his good points. And at the same time, he, in a very impassionate way, he puts down other people around him. And instead of focusing on their good points, he singles in, hones in on their chisronos, on their limitations, on their deficits. So now he's completely passionate about, number one, I am great, I laud myself, I praise myself for all my attributes, my greatness, and at the same time, that same passion tells me to look at the others around me and see their negative traits. Says Rabbi Yisrael, in the method, in the process of achieving anava, you have to fight the battle against gaiva. Rabbi, are you following with me so far? Just stop me if I go too fast, if I use Hebrew words that you're not that familiar with. He says the following. This is on the bottom of page 317. He says he gets to the point where he doesn't look, he looks away, he ignores the positive points of others. He looks away and ignores the negative points, the deficiencies and limitations of himself. So all he sees at this point and all he focuses on is Milas Atzmo, his greatness, and at the same time he focuses on Chisronos Chavero, the negative points of his friend. Now, two lines before the end of the page. Derech Tikuno Shel Adam Hazeh. What is the approach that, or the method, shall we say, of using all that passion and all that espilus which brought him to Gaiva to now rechannel it in the opposite direction to bring him to Anova? Lishtamish be also koach espilus. Do you see those words? That's what I want you to underline. Because what Rabbi Yisrael is basically saying is that there are certain emotional powers within a person that can go in one of two ways. They can bring him to a fork in the road, and it all depends where he turns. He can use those emotional passions for the negative, or he can turn them towards the positive. He's got to turn them upside down. And what does he have to do now? We're turning on to page 318. Lahagdil, to intensify his pilus on his chisronos. Now again, my friends, this may not sound so in vogue or contemporary. You know, it's not, this is not politically correct in our society today. Who would tell someone that he should focus on his limitations? Today, all we care about is self-esteem. Am I right? I mean, if you take Psych 101, then all they tell you about is build up a person's self-esteem. That's not Rabbi Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael is pre-modern psychology. And in his psychology, in order to achieve anava, a person should focus on the totality of his personality. He should not just be focused passionately on his positive features, but also he should realize his limitations. And at the same time, while he's adding and, you know, jacking up his pilus on his chisronos, on his negative, lumatzot, now when he looks out at his friends, what he's going to do is jack up his pilus on their positive. He's going to look and see how he can get excited about what their milus are, what their contribution, what their positive features are. So imagine you have a friend, and you see in him the negative attributes. What you have to do now is turn it all around. You have to ask yourself, well, what are his redeeming features? What's great about him? And until now you've been focused on yourself, me, myself, and I'm so focused on my greatness. Now turn it around and get passionate about your limitations. How can you improve yourself? You're not the greatest. You still have a long way to go. This is one example that Rabbi Yisrael gives as far as Tikkun Amidos is concerned. As we called it, to transform the personality. To take a midah, to acquire humility instead of gaiva, instead of being so full of himself and boasting and conceited. This is where seichel, logic, doesn't do it for him. Because logically, there's no reason from the intellectual point of view why he should come to this conclusion. After all, God created him with tremendous potential, with great features and attributes. Why should he focus on his negative? But there's a different type of role to play. Not the seichel of the intellect. And you remember last week we discussed that when you intellectually comprehend something, you're here and the object of your knowledge is there. You become separate. Here we're talking about hispilos. We're talking about impassioned speech and thought. At this level, you and your knowledge become one because you are now transforming your personality. That's what he calls tikkun hamidos. We call it transmutation.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Can you give an example, like a concrete example of what hipad would be?
I didn't catch the last few words.
What hitpalu is.
Hitpalut is to be impassioned about something, to get yourself excited. Don't just read a text like this. Oh, the Torah says we have to speak the truth, and the Torah says that we should never lie, and so on and so on. That's not impassioned. Do you remember that Rabbi Yisrael spoke about raising your voice, about moving your body, about hyping yourself up? You have to be in control of your emotional state. You have to know how to jack it up a few decibels. Every person is different, Rabbi Yisrael says. But that's what he needs, hitpalut. He needs that.
Is it hitpalut in learning, or is it hitpalut in tefillah? Is it hitpalut?
Oh, no. You're right. I mean, there could be hitpalut in many different areas, but what he's focused on is now hitpalut on midot. In other words, anything that focuses on a particular midah, and you're working on that particular attribute and you want to jack it up, you want to improve it, you need hitpalut. You need shinun, you need hitpalut, and this is all after the first two. Let's go over again, the step-by-step process. Number one was yira. Number two was yidiyah of seichel. So first you start with overall awe and fear of God. We had a long discussion about that. Then we went on to speak about stage number two, and that stage was the intellectual knowledge of midos, meaning to study the halachas of midos, that itself is going to make an impact on your soul. Study the book on Lashon Hara by Chofetz Chaim, for example. Then we get to the level number three. Level number three is shinun. Find that particular midah that you want to single out and work on. Study the laws and the statements of Chazal all over Shas with regard to that midah. Go over it 1,001 times. Number three is learn that piece of Torah on midos, but with his pilus. So it's not just shinun repetition, but it's also his pilus. And this is going to be a program in which, a method in which your his pilus is going to penetrate into the nefesh. Again, it's not two separate things. It becomes you and your nefesh as one, and we call it transmutation.
Is it related also to the word hitpalel?
Hitpalel means something else. Hitpalel means to judge, actually.
Right, it's a prayer, but to judge, yeah.
Prayer to prayer is to judge. I mean, that's a whole discussion unto itself.
This is
that's what I'm asking, yeah.
Different shorish.
Okay.
Now we get to hergel. You remember last week we spoke about constantly repeating the same behavior pattern over and over and over again. At this point in the juncture, Rabbi Yisrael says, you know what? Even his pilus is not enough. His pilus is definitely the most profound method for transmutation. But tikkun amidos is, you have to always realize that whatever you changed in your soul and whatever you improved in your soul, there still is something, you remember we spoke about this last week, lurking in the shadows. There's always a possibility that things may change, and the old desires, you know, for behavior that are not proper behavior is going to come back again and haunt you. So you need something called hergel. He tells you here in the second paragraph on page 318, how to say it in Yiddish. He says, praktikish imung Inbug means habitual. Hergel. Hergel means to repeat the same behavior pattern over and over again. So, for example, if you're working on the midah of happiness, as opposed to chas v'shalom, the opposite of being depressed, then what it means is you've got to find new ways constantly of making yourself happy. If you're working on the midah of emes, you have to constantly repeat that performance of emes. This means, number one, restraint, and continuous restraint becomes habitual. And he says, Yesh levatzeh, this is on the third, going on to the fourth line in the paragraph of Yisrael, Pu'ulot mamashiot, tangible actions, ritzufot, continuous, bikivun amidah sherotzeh letaknah l'shapra, vis-a-vis that particular character trait that you're trying to improve. And again, keep in mind, this is very individualistic. Everybody has their own, you know, their own focus, what they want to focus on. And he says the following, that not only are you impressed by general awe and general knowledge of the intellect, not only are you impressed and making impressions on the Kochos Keim through the Hispalus, but you're also making impressions on the Kochos Keim and transforming them through habitual restraint. By restraining yourself time after time, you are changing your inner soul. And therefore, kol pula upula, every action that you implement, mashirai, leaves a roshem. You remember Rabbi Yisrael's philosophy, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, of roshem, how everything makes an impact that penetrates into your soul. He says, each one of these actions, in and of itself, would make an impact, a roshem, on the nefesh. But when you repeat it over and over again, it becomes a total accumulation of all these reshamim. And now, it really changes the personality of the individual. His character traits becomes normative towards fulfilling God's will. Ad asher yitachdu bi'adam, we join together, we unite and synthesize all these impressions. V'yitku yase neman l'teva kayim, and they sort of like push in, you know, a yoseid is a peg, you know, if you hit the peg enough, hard enough, it's going to penetrate. He says if you hit it over and over again, it's going to change the personality. And here he relies on the Rambam. Now, for the next few minutes, I want to discuss with you Rabbi Yisrael's the influence of the Rambam on Rabbi Yisrael. The Rambam, as you know, in addition to being a great halachist, has written a tremendous amount on midos, on kochos, on nefesh. And I would focus on two different books of the Rambam. One is the Mishneh Torah, which he has what's called Hilchos Deos. Okay, the first of the 14 books in the Rambam is the book of Mada it's called, which means knowledge. And in that book, after he sets up the Yesodei HaTorah, meaning the fundamentals of the belief, he has a second section which is called Hilchos Deos. The word Deos, which shouldn't be translated as knowledge, but Deos means midos. Deos means ethics. The Rambam has a tremendous amount and a lot of brilliant insights about ethics. And in the Rambam, in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam speaks about habitualizing. Yargil Adam es Atzmo. A person has to train himself in midos. Achi Kavubo. Until they become a permanent part of his personality. Yase Vyashane Vyashalesh B'maisim. He should do it once and twice and thrice and over and over again, based on the ethical principles of the Torah. And that will change his very essential personality. Where else do we find a tremendous impact of the Rambam on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter? Now, I told you about the English version here of the book called Israel Salanter. And in this book, on page 133, he discusses the Rambam and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So I don't know if you were able to photocopy this. I guess not. So, you know, you'll just listen, and I think you'll hear it. The Rambam, in addition to the Mishneh Torah Hilchos Deos that we mentioned earlier, authored a very great ethical work which is called the Shmoneh Prakim. Literally translates the 8 chapters. And one of these chapters, the Rambam dedicates to the following question. It's what I call in yeshivish a language a chakira. You familiar with that that word? A chakira means it's either A or B. This is an investigation of two possibilities. So I'm going to present to you the Rambam's chakira, and then I'll tell you where he tips the scale. Is it A or B? What should be my attitude towards an avera, something that the Torah prohibits? Is it A or B? A says the following: it's disgusting. It's repulsive. Who would look at this lobster and think about eating a lobster? Oof! It's got all those tentacles. I hate it. That's one way of relating to mitzvahs. To find the mitzvahs repulsive and disgusting. B, the other possibility, is you know what? I'd love to eat that. But the Torah says, I'm not allowed to eat it. I think I mentioned to you, Rabbi Osai, once I have a friend who's a Baal Tshuva. His name is Stuart. I said to him, Stuart, he's a man of my age bracket. I said, what do you remember from the old days? He said, Rabbi, seafood. I said to him, seafood? That disgusting stuff? He said, Rabbi, you never tasted seafood. You have no idea what it tastes like. It's from a different world. That's what he told me. So I don't know. I'm just trusting what he said. So the Rabbi's second approach is that I should say, I'd love to violate this avera. If I only could, because it attracts me, it allures me, and it looks beautiful and wonderful. But the Torah says, I can't do it, I'm not allowed to do it. So the Rambam comes to the following conclusion. There are two types of mitzvahs, and the answer to that question depends upon those two categories of mitzvahs. The first category of mitzvahs are what the Rambam calls mitzvahs sichlios, rational prohibitions of the Torah. When it comes to rational prohibitions, we should restrain ourselves from committing these violations because they're disgusting, because they're repulsive. But he says there's another category of mitzvos, and those are called mitzvos shamaymios. These are non-rational prohibitions, like not eating milk and meat together. There's no reason why I shouldn't eat milk, meat and milk. There's no logical reason for that. It's not rational. Says the Rambam, in such a case, the approach should be much, much different. The approach should be, yes, I'd want to violate these averos, but the Torah says, I'm not allowed to. And he quotes, the Rambam quotes a very famous sifra. Sifra is, you know, the words of Chazal. Man should not say, I do not want to eat meat together with milk. He should say, I do indeed want to eat it. Give me a cheeseburger. Every Shabbos, when I lived in Kew Gardens Hills, I used to pass on my way to shul a place called McDonald's. You guys never heard of it. But at some point or another, I felt I had to cross the street to the other side because the smell was like overwhelming. And especially on a cold day when you know you smell that, those cheeseburgers. Wow. So the Rambam says, I want to eat those cheeseburgers. I'm not allowed to enjoy them. I'm not even allowed to enjoy the smell of the cheeseburgers because most of the chol is also about Noah. Although that's probably not true in this case because the meat itself is not kosher. Most of the chol is also about holy if the meat itself is kosher. But anyway.
But it's still over
him. It could be it's totally in the min, it could be it's totally in whether it's nevela or shchuta, I don't know.
So should we go to Ben Yehuda after this and have...
Yeah, just so yeah, no, I'm not telling you to eat it, I'm telling okay. you, do you want to eat it? You know, the Rambam says you should want to eat it, but you decide you're not going to eat it because the Almighty God commanded you not to eat it. How does this presentation, again, we just gave the tip of the iceberg of the Rambam, how does it impact on Rabbi Yisrael Salant? Rabbi Yisrael distinguishes between two types of tikkun amidos. And he wants to demonstrate...
That's the transmutation one?
Transmutation. And he wants to show that he can be reconciled with the Rambam. Because after all, in Rabbi Yisrael's hashkof, in his ideology, it seems that the Rambam is incorrect. Because our whole goal was to change our inner soul. And we want to take all those desires and rechannel them. There doesn't seem to be any room in Rabbi Yisrael's frame of reference for allowing for the Rambam, I do want to eat it, but I'm not to do so. Because once I change my inner soul, then I don't want to eat this. I've already set up my soul as normative, meaning wanting to do exactly what God wants to. Says Rabbi Yisrael, there are two different types of transmutation. Two different types of tikkun amidos. And therefore there's no contradiction between his instructions, his methodology, Rabbi Yisrael, and the Rambam's praise of the desire to engage in non-rational, prohibited acts. Rabbi Yisrael says the following: with regard to the desire to transgress rational commandments, man ought to utterly transmute his desires one at a time, everyone individually. Let man transform his soul forces and his character traits into good, to the extent that the power of evil is totally uprooted from him, neither to be heard from or found within him whatsoever. And this, Rabbi Yisrael, corresponds to the Rambam as far as mitzvos shamaimios, right? Mitzvos that are irrational. Again, to change my soul and have absolutely no desire whatsoever for... I'm sorry, did I say irrational? Scratch that. Sorry, I apologize. What I meant to say was mitzvos sichlios. Okay, so we're now focused on rational commandments. I should have no desire whatsoever. I've changed myself and transmuted my inner soul to have no desire whatsoever for what? For a violation of rational commandments. That's... In this context, Rabbi Yisrael corresponds to the Rambam. However, with regard to non-rational commandments, we gave an example of non-kosher food. He says transmutation of an individual desire would contradict the Rambam's preference for wanting to violate it, right? Because we're talking now about mitzvot shamaimios. We're talking about prohibitions that are irrational, and the Rambam says that we should really desire to violate these prohibitions. But yet, Rabbi Yisrael says that with regard to non-rational commandments, we have to get to tikkun amidos, transmutation of the desire. How do we reconcile Rabbi Yisrael with the Rambam? I didn't ask this question. Rabbi Yisrael asked this question. And this is what he says. With regard to the desire to transgress non-rational commandments, man ought not to transmute these desires in their individuality, but to transmute his ratzon klali, his general will, his undirected diffused desire to sin. I'll try to explain this. He will thereby refrain from transgressing non-rational commandments out of sheer desire to adhere to the will of God. This is mamish profound. What can I tell you? You know, you talk about, in Hebrew it's called dakus, you know, getting down to very subtle distinctions. Rabbi Yisrael says that man's desire to violate the Torah can be broken down into two different parts. One is the desire to violate this specific avera which looks so attractive to me and calls out to me. The other is a desire to violate the general will of God. Says Rabbi Yisrael, with regard to non-rational commandments, right, like our case of meat and milk, it depends where the transmutation is done. Rabbi Yisrael says, I can reconcile my theory of transmutation with the Rambam's. How? How so? He says the transmutation here should be on the general will. Man has two different types of wills. He has a will to violate this specific prohibition, and he has a general will vis-a-vis God and the will of God. That general will is called Ratzon Klali. With regard to Ratzon Klali, man has to engage in transmutation. He has to transmute any desires of his general will until he gets to the point where his general will is totally pure, totally focused on fulfilling the will of God. He will refrain from transgressing non-rational commandments out of the sheer desire to adhere to the will of God. The Rambam is right, says Rabbi Yisrael. As far as this particular avera is concerned, it's an irrational commandment. It speaks to me. It beckons to me. And I desire to violate it. Now, this is part of a discussion. If we didn't photocopy these pages, please, I beg of you, to photocopy pages 134 to 137, and we'll go over this Bli Nedar next week. What I want to do now is finish this chapter in Dov Katz, because what we're coming up to is a fascinating piece in this chapter. Rabbi Yisrael published a book maybe the word shouldn't be published. I said, maybe called it republished. In other words, what happens if there's a book out there and I decide our generation needs to learn that book? It was published 100 years ago. So is that, would that be called republished? We'll use that word. You know what I mean. As long as you know what I mean. Okay.
Recommission, maybe?
So Rabbi Yisrael republished a book that was published about 100 years earlier. And that book is called Tikkun HaMidos. That book is called Cheshbon HaNefesh. Now, you'll take a look on page 318 at a paragraph called Lematara Zu, which means the following. Rabbi Yisrael advocates a program of habitualization, of hergel. And within the context of that methodology, Rabbi Yisrael proposed that we all become experts on a book called Cheshbon HaNefesh. If you take a look at footnote number 12 on the bottom of your page, you will see that the author of this book was Rav Menachem Lapin Misetnov, and it was published in the year Tafresh Samache. So let me make a quick calculation. 4 Kufresh is 665, and 1240 is... No, this doesn't make sense. Where did I make my mistake? Tough. 665. No, I don't know. Something is not, it's not working out. Anyway. Okay. Now, about, I would say, I'm just guessing, 85 years ago, Rav Baruch Epstein, which you'll see in footnote number 13, who's known perhaps most famously for his work called the Torah Tmima. Have you heard of it, the Torah Tmima? I would highly recommend if you want to buy yourself a gift for your upcoming birthday, buy yourself a Torah Tmima. It's just an amazing, amazing piece of work. It's 5 volumes on the 5 books of Moses. In any event, I don't want to get off on a tangent. He wrote another book, which is called Makar Baruch. Same author as the Torah Tmima, but this is a history work. And in this history work, he claims, and he researched it amongst the students and the disciples of Rabbi Yisrael, that Rabbi Yisrael told his students that each one of them, after reading the book Cheshbon HaNefesh from this Rav Mendel Lapin, to buy himself a little notebook and write a daily diary based on this book of what challenges he faced on that particular day. Now, what is the essence of this book called Cheshbon HaNefesh? You'll see on page 319 a list of 13 midos. Let's read them very quickly. Emes, truth. Zrizus is alacrity, meaning getting excited about doing a mitzvah. Charitzus means making a decision and sticking to the decision. Kavod means to give honor to your friend. Menucha means to be in a state of calm. Nachas, very similar to menucha. Nikayon means cleanliness. Savlanut means tolerance. Seder means organized, very similar to Nikayon number 7. Finally, number 10 is humility. Number 11 is justice. Number 12 is not to spend too much money. Number 13 is silence. Now, in the cases of each one of these 13, he goes into great detail about what the meaning and the essence of each one of these midos are, without going into the Torah that we spoke about before, you know, going through Shas and collecting all the statements of Chazal about how we should implement each one of these 3 midos. So Rabbi Yisrael advocates, according to the Makar Baruch, that on a daily basis, a person should record the challenges with regard to each one of these 13 midos. Now, I don't know how much time you have on a daily basis to do this. I would recommend a different version, a slightly different version, and you choose which one of the 13 you want to focus on and give it an amount of time. And this you'll see in a footnote on page 320. That's footnote number 15. Do you see that?
Yeah.
He says the following, that Rav Baruch Epstein thinks that this list of 13 midos includes everything. Says Rav Dov Katz, he made a major mistake. These 13 midos were listed in the Cheshbon HaNefesh because the Cheshbon HaNefesh had an agenda to arrive at the number 13. Why at the number 13? And the answer is that according to the program of the Cheshbon HaNefesh, a person should dedicate 1 week to each one of these 13 midos, which means that he covers the entire gamut of the 13 in 13 weeks. And he says the following, if you multiply 13 times 4, who can do that math for me? 13 times 4 is how much?
52.
52. How many weeks are there in a year?
52.
So basically, this is an annual program which allows a week for each midah times 4, meaning after we finish the 13 midos, we do it again and again and again, 4 times over, and that covers the entire year. However, although that's the program of the Cheshbon HaNefesh, he says that there are lots more midos that we want to work on. These are only the 13 that were chosen by Rav Lapin because he wanted to get to the number 13, but there are many, many more midos. So again, if we go back to this scoreboard here, and if you want to take it upon yourself to keep this diary, then I would recommend that you sit in a quiet room for a number of hours and try to contemplate what midah do you want to work on. And it might not be on this 13. And then, at the end of this footnote number 15, he tells us that this book by Rav Menachem Mendel Lapin, called Cheshbon HaNefesh, is built on a previously written book. Which book is that? Everybody? Benjamin Franklin. He says, Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh, Chubar al pi ha-sefer l'tikun ha-midah shal ha-choker ha-nochri. Interesting, he calls Benjamin Franklin a choker, meaning a scientist of some sort, who investigated the ethical structure of man and came up with these 13 midos. And what Rav Mendel Lapin wanted to accomplish was he wanted to borrow from Benjamin, good old Benny Franklin. I remember taking my kids in Philadelphia, there's a Benjamin Franklin Museum. Have you ever been there? Oh, you have to go. It's an amazing experience. And the man was like hundreds of years ahead of his time in so many areas of knowledge. Anyway, so what the Cheshbon HaNefesh, the author of that book, wanted to do is he wanted to popularize amongst religious Jews the insights and the accomplishment of Benjamin Franklin. So if they ever ask you, give me an example of a secular book written by a non-Jew that has penetrated into the walls of Orthodox Judaism, tell him Benjamin Franklin's book on the 13 ethical principles. Now, we're up to the paragraph that starts on this same page, Es Avodas HaHergel HaMidos. Now, do you remember last week we discussed the difference between young people and middle-aged or older people? That's where, right here is where Rav Katz presents that thesis. He says the following, the methodology of Hergel HaMidos, of habitual restraint, as we said, over and over again, is very appropriate for a young person. Why? Because a young person's Midos are still in an amorphous phase. They have not yet developed. They're not hardcore, as we would say. He says in the older years, kaved, it's very heavy to a person to try to use hergel and constantly restrain himself from things that he is so accustomed and he's so conditioned to do. But in Yimei Bachrus, in the years of youth, that's where this method called hergel becomes so critical, becomes so possible and feasible. Because it's before the midos have been rooted, deeply rooted in the personality of a person. Therefore, the next paragraph called Yesh Yimei HaBachrut, meaning the younger years, at a time when young people are still far removed from the daily challenges, the great challenges of life, They're removed from the tirdos achayim, you know, the heavy issues of life. When they're kochos, their character traits are still rachim, they're still pliable. That's the best time to work the avoda, this methodology of hergel. And Rabbi Yisrael has a comparison between the avoda, the challenge of midos, of tikkun midos, transmutation, and the military battlefield. That's his favorite mashal, Rabbi Yisrael. And he writes the following: Kasher alimud bechokhmat hamilchama ubediyuk atzum v'nora. Just as if you go to a military outlet, you know, where the generals and the brainstorm, you know, the think tank, where they're working overtime, bediyuk, and they are planning something with great meticulous care. It's impossible, he says, to go out in battle and expect to succeed without these intricate, detailed plans. You know, I'm thinking of a quarterback. Have you ever seen one of those books, you know, those books that have diagrams for quarterbacks? Playbook. You know, what's it called? Playbook. You have to understand that it's critical that every single member on the team is positioned in the exact same place and will move in a certain direction. That's what the military campaign is all about. He says, so too, in this metaphor, limud bechachmas melchamas kvishas amidos. If we talk, oh, now he's talking about subjugation. Remember, we spoke about subjugation in which you are constantly bombarded with challenges, and now you want to overcome those challenges, overcome those impulses from the kochos hakehim, and you want to now get into a hergel that's going to subjugate these various impulses. He says, Zot mishpatam, this is the way you have to do it. Lilmod, you have to study. Lahargil behem b'diyuk nochon, to prepare for those challenges in advance with great meticulous care, like the battlefield. Hagam, even though, shol yelchu b'shleimusa b'yeis osko b'galiyam, Hazmani says, even though it's going to fluctuate with the waves of time, things are going to change, you'll change, the challenges are change. Nevertheless, the principle is always the same. For kvishas hayetzer, in order to subjugate those impulses, what you need is to be well prepared, well thought out, for this incredible battle that goes on and on. At what point in life, at what stage in life, is a person ready for kvishas hayetzer? Not in one's youth, but rather in one's older age. So let's take a look at the English on page 141. He says the following.
Hergel doesn't lead to kvishas
hayetzer. Hergel is critical in kvishas hayetzer, and it is very, very important in tikkun amidos. Whereas in tikkun amidos, we said we have impassioned speech, we spoke about shinun, about hispilus. That's not going to help for kvishas hayetzer. Kvishas hayetzer just means to condition yourself habitually to restrain, overcome temptation. Rabbi Yisrael writes that in practice, transmutation is generally suitable for young people, meaning, as we saw before, the young people can transmute their midos because their midos are not set in stone. You know, they're not hardcore, if you will. But subjugation is generally more suitable for middle-aged and old people, young people who are not conditioned by inevitable limitations and responsibilities, the tirdos that we spoke about of adult life, find it very difficult to subjugate their desires. And basically the underlying thesis of Rabbi Yisrael is that subjugation is an ongoing painful battle. Painful to overcome, to restrain yourself. You know, anybody who knows anything about dieting will know exactly what I mean. I put in front of you a beautiful piece of cake, and you're on a diet, strict diet, for a million and one reasons. You shouldn't be eating that cake. Imagine restraining yourself. It's an incredible battle. He says that older people in adult life, they are conditioned already through life's trials and tribulations to restrain and go through this very painful experience. The young people are not conditioned for this kind of thing. And also, the young people have soul forces, which means the kochos ha-nefesh, that are not deeply ingrained as they are in older people. Hence, Rabbi Yisrael advises young people to concentrate on transmuting their soul forces. On the other hand, middle-aged and older people are accustomed to limitations, to challenges, to painful burdens and responsibilities. They don't find it inordinately difficult to subjugate the desires. They can restrain themselves. However, on the flip side of it, also in older people, unworthy soul forces have become so deeply ingrained that tikkun amidos becomes such a great challenge. Transmutation is very, very difficult for an older person. He is so set in his ways, right? It's deeply ingrained. How he's going to make that change? Hence, Rabbi Yisrael advises older people to concentrate on subjugation. That method will be a lot easier for them than transmutation.
And the way they do that is through kafya, because they're better at it than you.
Correct. Because they're so much better at it. Now, if you'll take a look at page 321, and we're moving towards the end, but Baruch Hashem, we fit in a great deal of what I had set for tonight. He says the following. Although tikkun amidos, this is in a paragraph that starts Rabbi Yisrael in the middle of the page. There's another one on the bottom of the page, but Rabbi Yisrael number one. He says that even after you've gone through all the first stages that we spoke about, of limud until he's a baki v'charif, he knows the laws, he's gathered together all the statements of Chazal on any particular midah, he's done the shinun, and he studied it in depth over and over and over again, he's gotten to the stage of espilus, impassioned speech and thought, but nevertheless, for tikkun amidos, he needs hergel, because hergel is going to break his will. Hergel is going to habitually restrain his will. And again, even though it's a very bitter experience, and here I feel that Rabbi Yisrael is giving us a little bit of chizuk, you know, he's empathizing with the amazing, heavy, heavy challenge of Hergel. He says, Kasha Yasok Harbi Bozer, finally, after he does it over and over again, Yasim Lo Kimotivo, it becomes like his second nature. Ki HaHergel, this is a great sentence, HaHergel Ose Teva Sheni, it makes us a substitute nature. And you may recall that we mentioned a French psychologist who was a contemporary of Yisrael, who also wrote books on this topic of Hergel and how Hergel can change a person's psyche and his personality. Therefore, Rabbi Yisrael puts a tremendous amount of emphasis on breaking the midah of kavod. Kavod means when a person seeks out honor and glory. Very difficult, he says, for such a person to achieve hergel in which he gives up on his glory. What's the best method of acquiring midos, tovos, good midos? L'chazek atzmo, to give himself extra strength, lizbol, to suffer bizayon. You know, somebody comes over to him and says, okay, you know, you can no longer give the lecture, I'm going to give the lecture. You can no longer give, you know, this teaching, I'm going to give the teaching, right? So he gets embarrassed. He feels a sense of lowliness. Imagine to do that and experience that over and over and over again. Limnoa atzmo min hakavod, to offer someone else to wear the crown of glory and give up on his own rights. He says, very difficult. But im titane yom echad, if he suffers, miloshon inui, inui means affliction, one day, that'll begin to weaken his desire for kavod. Im tisbol bizayon yom echad, another day, he suffers this humiliation. Then it gets to the point where it becomes second nature. And he doesn't feel that same sense of pain and suffering when he has to give up on his cover. And finally, in the last paragraph in this section, I'm sorry, I jumped a gun here. There are two more paragraphs. He says the following. Hishtalmut ha-midot, to perfect one's midos, he says we should follow the Rambam. This is the third occasion in which Rabbi Yisrael is impacted by the Rambam. The Rambam says that we look for and we try to implement the golden mean. We try not to go to this extreme or another extreme. However, the Rambam says there's one exception to that rule, and that is the midah of anava, of humility. Why? Because a person's inner nature moves him in a very profound and intense way towards gaiva, towards wanting kavod and glory. And here, says the Rambam, which Rabbi Yisrael reiterates here on the top of page 322, Yesh la'achoz b'derech kitzonit. We should go to another extreme and really work on ourselves to be ma'od ma'od shpal ruach, to be very, very humble. And that's why the Torah describes Moshe Rabbeinu as being very, very humble. Kamo kaneh rach, if you have a soft reed that grows from the ground, as long as it stands, it's shoveh, it's right in the middle. However, if you move it towards one extreme, then it jumps to the other extreme. Do you follow? It bends over towards the other and jumps. He says that's what you have to do with regard to Adnova. And it's amazing that amongst all the midos that Rabbi Yisrael advocates working on, Adnova, humility, is really top on his list. For two reasons. First of all, because Gaiva is so destructive in terms of his relationship to other men and to himself. But secondly, because this is a beautiful example for Rabbi Yisrael from his perspective of how to achieve tikkun amidos, of how to challenge oneself habitually to give up on the first, you know, to be the first, what was it, Avis? No, which was the one that said, we're number two? No, you don't remember this? There were two car rental companies. It was Avis and Hertz Rent-A-Car. So I don't know, one of them, I think it was Avis, used to say, we're number two. You know, we have a humble position, but we're better than number one. In any event, he says, Rabbi Yisrael warns us, if you're battling again in this battlefield against bad midos, make sure that you don't take on too much at one shot. Focus on one mida at a time. Because if you're going to focus on all of them together, you'll get the opposite results. If a person, on the other hand, is going to focus his attention and single out one particular midah, that's where he could have success, and then he's ripe to move on to the next midah. And therefore, ein livlo b'vasachas hamidos hakosh, don't try to absorb all the bad midos that you have and approach them at one point. He concludes this paragraph on page 323 by telling you in a sort of an apologetic, humble way that don't think that we covered all of what Rabbi Yisrael has to say about the methodology of tikkun amidos. Elu hein hora'ot mekuta'ot. These are just fractions and little perspectives, partial perspectives on what we have to do. But again, Rabbi Yisrael says, Nekel avar kol ha'shas. It's much easier, said Rabbi Yisrael, a very famous statement, to learn all of Shas. By the way, that's not so easy. But it's easier than to be metaken mida achas. It's easier, relatively, than correcting one single mida. And Rabbi Yisrael warns us, but at the same time comforts us, that yesh aliyot, yiridot, kfitzot, nefilot. It's a merry-go-round. It's like a... what's it called that tests the heartbeat?
EKG.
It's like an EKG. Have you ever seen an EKG? You know, it goes up and down, up and down. That's what tikkun amidos is all about. And he says that it's going to be a while till we succeed in this battle. But zer means a covering or an adornment will cover his head. Zer nitzachon ha'shleimut. And that's where man has freedom of choice. Never believe that you cannot change. Rabbi Yisrael is an absolute believer in freedom of choice. Man can recreate himself, transform himself through transmutation, and the benefits and the rewards at the end are incredible. So this is where we stop tonight, at the end of chapter 23. We have one more chapter to go in Rabbi Yisrael's methodology, and that's chapter 24. Again, I would encourage you to take this home, especially Benjamin Franklin's list of 13 midos, and see what you can come up with. Decide for yourself if you want to buy yourself a little book. I'm selling them outside in the kiosk here at a pretty reduced price. Just kidding with you. But here on page 324, we're going to have Taksisei Melchemet HaYitzarim. And I think, as I told you, we have to find a way of avoiding all those evils and you know, fooling those forces of evils until we can finally control them. So that's going to take us from pages 324 to page 334. I don't know, Jackie, if you have any time to photocopy this, I'll certainly leave the book for you.
Robert?
Yes?
You said young people need to do tikkun as opposed to...
Should focus their attention more on tikkun, because their midos have not yet been entrenched.
Then you said it's harder for them to do... to use self-restraint, but then you said the method for tikkun is haragel for young people, and isn't haragel the same thing?
Correct, but I think what he's saying is that haragel, in the case of a young person, to recondition his midos is a lot easier than in an older person where the midos are developed and entrenched and anchored in their sort of engraved in stone. So the whole process of haragel is a lot easier for young person. So I'm jealous of you, gentlemen, because I'm already in the middle age. I just turned 40. So therefore, for me, it's very difficult to change mythos. You know, they're so set in motion. Although I have a better propensity, a better shot at kvisha sayetza, because that mochama I've been facing for a full lifetime. So I'm a little bit more trained and conditioned in that. So gentlemen, for you, it's tikkun amidos. And that's why this piece from Cheshvan HaNefesh is really worth it.
So we're saying it's a double-edged sword, basically. If you're old, you're more conditioned. If you're young, you're more impressionable in a positive way.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So what I'm suggesting
is... the method is hergel.
And the method is going to be hergel.
Either way,
although again, hergel is going to play a secondary role in the case of tikkun amidos. Because again, Rabbi Yisrael offers all those methods leading up to and culminating in haragel in the case of tikkun amidos transmutation. In the case of subjugation, it's go out there, restrain yourself, time after time, it's pure haragel. So haragel plays a secondary role in tikkun amidos. It's the only method in the case of kvisha sayyid.
So in tikkun, he was emphasizing more hitpalut for...
Correct. In tikkun amidos, you start with hitpalut, and that's going to take you. Again, keep in mind, hitpalut is only stage 3. Before that, you had the limud, and you had the shinun, and then you're ready for hitpalut. Of course, you can integrate the two methods together. And Rabbi Sol is never going to be satisfied without hergel. Hergel is always going to play a crucial role. But in the case of kvisha, in subjugation, it's only haragel. It starts with haragel, continues with haragel, it ends with haragel. There are no other methods. Masha'enken, in the case of tikkun amidos, there are a number of methods that are preliminaries, but at the end of the day, he says you must achieve haragel. Now again, I just want to leave you with one last sentence that I don't want anyone here to think I have any vested interest, but I think if after all the work that we've been doing, for how many weeks now? I think it's about, what, Jackie, 6 weeks? Does that make sense?
Something around there, yeah.
Something around there. Maybe it's 5 weeks, whatever it is. What I'd like you to take out of this, as we say, halacha lemaisa, in practical, tangible terms, is the possibility of keeping such a diary. Again, everyone's going to be different. I'm not going to tell you that you're going to write in your diary every single day and you're going to write pages and pages. But I think there's something here that could be meaningful. It's very subjective, very individualistic. Try to think, you're young people and therefore it's a lot easier for you. Try to think where you can improve yourself. Where are your challenges? Whether it's on the list of the 13 or more likely, it's beyond the list of the 13. With all due respect to the Makar Baruch who said that this is an exhaustive list. No, it's not an exhaustive list, not at all. Many of us face challenges, as I said before, about happiness, about being satisfied, about appreciating, about gratitude. These are not even on the list. And then it goes on and on and on. But to try to focus, we live in a life where things just go on and on. We're too busy doing, teaching dancing or whatever we're doing, and we don't have a chance to stop and contemplate. And that's what he's begging us to do. Okay, there on both sides? If anyone has any questions, just stick around, but as of now, we've ended. I don't want you to think I.
You were saying Palud is more like the method in which you do your learning and you do your like actually practicing your midot.
No, I'm saying Hitpalut is you do your learning and figure out how you can get passionate about your learning. Mm-hmm. Did you follow my example before? Two ways of reading a text. I could read it as part of a science, you know.
But you implement the Hipalu when you're doing Musar in the actual learning.
Correct. In the actual learning.
But is that maybe like psyching yourself up for war, in a sense? Is that kind of the idea?
Kind of, yeah. You're really psyching yourself up.
Yeah.
And also Hipalu.
You're really getting yourself impassioned about it. You know? It's not just, you know, one part of my brain. It's like my whole essence is involved. And if you know, I don't know if we'll ever get a chance to visit a Musa yeshiva or a Beis HaMusa, we'll see how those who are into the Musa, again, there are plenty of guys who will sit on the sidelines, you know, they're not into it. But those who are serious about Musa and are impacted, again, we haven't even touched on the disciples of Rabbi Yisrael. Each one of Rabbi Yisrael's disciples took Musa in a slightly different direction. And we're going to have to decide if we want to go into that. You know, I hope that if you're not interested in that, then we'll take up some other study. I'm here for you. But if you're interested in that, I mean, we're going to get to Rav Itzel Blazer, we're going to talk about the Altar of Kelm, we're going to talk about the Navarikas, we're going to talk about Slobodka and the Altar of Slobodka. I mean, each one had his own take on how to extend Rav Yisrael and apply it in a practical way. But one thing I can tell you, those who are studying Musar will not read a Musar text like this, you know, They get really, really heavy into it. It's kind of like, again, I don't want to make an equation, it's kind of like in Eastern religions, they have something called meditation. But in meditation, it's mostly focused on the brain. And you meditate in such a way that you filter out any other influences until you get so concentrated that you begin to see the lights. So for example, when I was in graduate school, we had over 100 students in the class. The professor's name was Hans Jonas. In his time, he was the most outstanding philosopher in ethics, probably in the United States of America. He was a German Jew. And I couldn't believe in one lecture. I thought he was talking about a Jewish concept. I came up to him after the lecture and immediately says to me, Yudke Vavke. Like, I knew exactly where he was holding. Mm. This was Hans Jonas. And there was one woman in the class, a young woman, who was clearly superior beyond all the 99 other people in the class. And one day she came to class and she was wearing a pin of a guru, you know, one of these gurus from the Far East. So I came over to her and I said, can I have a word with you after class? And I was a yeshivish guy, so it's a little embarrassing talking to a non-Jewish young woman. But I was just dying of curiosity. I mean, this was killing my whole image of her. Like, she was going to be Phi Beta Kappa, she was going to be A++, she was going to get a PhD in 5 different fields. I mean, she was clearly superior beyond belief. And now she's wearing a pin of a guru. She starts describing to me what meditation is all about. I couldn't believe it. This is an intelligent woman. I never thought that meditation had anything of value to it. I wasn't brought up with that. Maybe you guys know more about meditation than I do. If you take a look at Rav Kaplan's book, he has a whole book on meditation. Are you familiar with Rav Kaplan?
Ari Kaplan.
Ari Kaplan. You have to read his books. I don't know if I recommend one on meditation. I never read it. But he has an anthology of works that you have to get a hold of. I mean, he has a piece on tefillin that's magnificent beyond belief. A piece on mikvah, what mikvah is all about.
I wrote a short article on tefillin. He kind of likened it to like a radio that tunes in.
Yeah. God, man, and tefillin. Yeah. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful piece. But he has many, many pieces. The man died at the age of 48. He was an incredible, incredible mind. But he has a whole book on Jewish meditation.
Hit Bonadut.
Yeah. So I'm not going to make fun of meditation. You know, I'm not a Bretzlover, but they meditate. And I met a woman who meditates. And she told me about what she sees during meditation. I mean, lights going this way and that. The intake of the universe, the outtake, the breath. This was like, whoa. This was like too heavy for me. So I'm just using meditation in a sort of as an example, as a metaphor, in a parallel way. Rabbi Yisrael wants his pilus. Just like meditation is meant to be a profound experience, you could read a text in a very superficial way and just accumulate more and more knowledge, spit it back on an exam, but it makes no impact on your soul. You walk out of the exam and they ask you one of the questions and you completely blank out. Did you ever have that experience? You know what I mean? But when you cram for an exam, they still use those words, or yeah. It's a high passé. You cram for an exam, and your brain somehow is able to maintain knowledge for about 5 minutes or 50 minutes just to get by the exam. I had a course like that in college, in graduate school. you could have seen me before I went into the exam. I knew everything about phenomenology. Walk out of the exam, test me on phenomenology, went in one ear and came out the other. That's what it means to cram for an exam. That's not Rabbi Yisrael's Hispilus. The gauge of Hispilus is to what extent can you involve and engage your entire self. The most profound, you know, spiritual forces within you, the nefesh, the kokos nefesh, and in a very emotional way. That's what he means by Hispilus. Does he give you the step-by-step, blow-by-blow description? From what I've seen, the answer is no. It's a very subjective, individual thing. Okay, Rabbi Osai, we'll stop here because